Well, I thought I would do a quick recap since we last were in the Old Testament. When we were last in the Old Testament, Joseph had gotten reunion with his family. Jacob and the whole tribe and all of Israel came over to Egypt because the Canaan and the Promised Land was in famine. And Joseph was pretty much second in command to the Pharaoh. So for the Israelites, life was rich and beautiful, and they were there in this beautiful area by the Nile Crescent Valley, and green and luscious. And they lived there until all of those generations died. Pharaoh generations died, and a new Pharaoh had come into power who began to oppress the people of Israel because they had too much power, he thought. So their story, their family story, was we are the chosen people from Abraham. And I think your lesson might have been a little bit about Abraham and that promise and that covenant of being the chosen people. They knew that history. They knew that story. So that's their family story. And there they had been living in luxury for a while. So their family story seemed to be living out, maybe not in the promised land, but living out in a land. And then oppression hit. And then slavery hit. So we had a shift in their understanding of who they were. And now they're an oppressed people. And now they're at the whim of the Pharaoh, whether or not he puts straw in their clay mix. Everything is under the guidance and direction of the Pharaoh. And they begin to identify themselves as an enslaved people who are immigrants in a foreign land. And finally, they cry out to God for help. And God rises up Moses, and Moses comes over and he confronts Pharaoh, and we begin to see God doing miraculous things. We see God bringing those plagues, and finally the last plague, and they're told to pack up their belongings, don't rise the bread, eat flat unleavened bread so that you can be ready on the go. So off they go without packing up all their provisions. But the Pharaoh gave them all the treasury that he gave them. So they left Egypt on the run because Pharaoh's army is coming behind them. And what they have in their possession are jewels, not water and food. They weren't prepared for the hurricane or the tornado or the exodus. They were not prepared. They did not have meals ready to eat. They didn't have anything with them but jewelry. So then they see those pillars of pillar of cloud and pillar of fire that's keeping the army behind them. And they come up to the water and they see the waters part. God's doing some pretty big things, isn't he? And if you were a people, wouldn't you be following this God wherever God led you? And the bishop spoke about this, and it hadn't struck me until I heard her say this. If you look in the scriptures, it says the people walked across dry land. So when the waters parted, they didn't walk across mud. God even dried the bottom of the riverbed so they could walk across dry land. And then as the waters began to fold in on the army, it says the Egyptian army went through the mud. So God was beginning to slow their journey and kill them all in the water. The people saw all this. The people experienced God in this way, so much so that Miriam got out her tambourine and they danced in celebration on the other side of the Red Sea. So then they're heading into the desert, into the wilderness, into this dry place, and they began to complain. They begin to complain because the only thing they knew of their identity was they were going to a promised land they didn't know, led by a man they really didn't know, with this God who they've just begun to come to understand. And the first thing they do is they ask for water, and Moses, through God's help, turns bitter water into fresh water. And then shortly thereafter, they're complaining they need food. Because remember, they left in a hurry. Say they needed to eat, and God provided the quail and the manna. And then it's just a week or so later, they get to this place, to where we are this morning. And they're thirsty again, and there's no water in sight. Wouldn't you be complaining? Did you feel anything wrong in their complaints? Why not complain to Moses? You know, hey, you're carrying us through here. What are you doing? We're thirsty. We're hungry. We're starved. We're going to die. In fact, at one time they tell him, we'd rather be slaves in Egypt, sitting at the flesh pots and having bread to eat, than die here as free people in the wilderness. And now they're ready to stone him because he's the one who's led them out and they don't have any water. So God, once again, God continues being faithful. Every time they ask something of God, God does it. Moses comes and he brings his staff and he hits that rock and waters flow and the people quench their thirst. So why do they have to get to the point of complaining? Why does God allow them, we might ask, to come to that point of desperation that they finally complain? Well, I'm going to reverse the question and say, why didn't they ask God from the start? Why did they have to get to a point of desperation before they would turn to the one who could provide everything for them? Why did they wait? Why did they wait? Think about this time in between enslavement to free people in the promised land. They had to go through a reformation of who they are as children of God. They had to let go of the fact that they were no longer slaves. They had to let go of that whole slavery mentality that the government will provide all for you. And they had to be stripped of that sense that someone else was responsible. And then God could take kind of the clean slate that moved into the promised land. And who could worship a God who was the one who provided for all their needs. Basically, everything, their foundation was stripped out and pulled away from them, and they were at rock bottom. And the only thing they could do is turn to God. But we know if we continue on in this story, they don't keep returning to God. They keep wanting to go back. They keep wanting to go back to Egypt, back to where it was easier to live as a slave than to live as God's chosen people in the promised land. That was work. That was hard. That meant ignoring the things of the world and focusing only on the one who called them into a different way of being in the world. And as we move through time in our scriptures, we find that we, even today, have that same difficulty, don't we? We have trouble dealing with the world as followers of Jesus Christ, because sometimes the world is much more tempting than it is to be a disciple of Jesus. Sometimes it's easier to do what the world says than do what God asks of us. And God knew that. God knew that. So God did this wonderful thing for us. God sent his son in human flesh to stand where we stand, to do what we do, to eat the foods we eat, to drink the wine that they drank, but also to drink a different cup. He drank the cup of death so that we wouldn't have to. He died on the cross so that we could have life and have it eternally. When we think about these major shifts in God's relationship to humanity, this is an earthquake kind of shift when he died and rose again. God was claiming us in a way that God had never claimed us before. God has claimed us from the time of creation until today and beyond. But God said, not only are you mine, but I'm going to die your death so you don't have to. But why are we more like the people of Israel in the wilderness, a wilderness wandering people who would rather do the things of the world than follow Christ. The church is in the midst of a reformation. If you haven't felt the shifting of our church, look in our pews. We are in the midst of a reformation. How God is going to shake us up, how God is going to move us to that place of desperate that we have to look at God and say, I'm thirsty. Can you give me some water? And God will provide. How God is going to do that, we do not know. But what God is calling us to do is to love Him and to follow Him, which means sometimes, a lot of times, to say no to the slavery of the world and to consider the things that enslave us rather than consider the one who frees us. Because he can free us from all our sins, and he can free us from our enslavement to the things of the world. Moses didn't name the place where he struck the rock about God's faithful action. He named it from the Hebrew that means put to the test or quarrel or strife. He named it as a reminder of this is the place where we quarreled and we had strife because we could not believe God would be faithful enough to provide us water so that we might live. Well, God provides us living water. God provides us this sacrament that the whole world will be celebrating of a bread and juice, some drinking wine, that remind us of God's sacrifice for us. So as we prepare to come to God's table, we're going to sing a song this morning that is called